and welcome to another edition of This Is Wrestling. It is Lieber Sage. Off of pretty much predicting every Survivor Series match in its entirety correctly. And then there's Zach McGibbon, who had his football podcast. Zach, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Lee. I actually thought I did pretty well on the Survivor Series predictions as well. So one match, I got it right to the T in terms of who would take the pin and who wouldn't take the pin. But nonetheless, I'm looking forward to talking with you. It's always good to talk with you, even though I sometimes get buried on this show every week. But I enjoy
sometimes
doing the show.
Sometimes every week? That's a contradiction, Zach.
Almost every week. How about that?
Well, this week, no exception. Not only Survivor Series come and gone, so we'll talk about that. The Book of Lists will be out again to see how poorly Zach listed something a year, two, 3 years ago. And we will relist Zach's Book of Lists.
Yes.
What topic will it be tonight? I don't know. But the latest sensation going around the interweb is, I guess, from Spotify. And it's a bunch of bands that are in your playlist, and they're all put together in like a Lollapalooza type festival listing. And I'm happened to be looking at Zach McGibbon Fest.
Yes.
And oh my God, is it horrific? So we need to start with this.
That's not true. My music taste is way better than yours.
No,
way better than yours. You're not fighting this one. I'm
going to read it.
Go ahead.
You're actually not. It's just so bad.
What are you talking about?
I can't even describe to you how bad it is. It's like, yeah, I told people that Sami Zayn would be the reason why the Bloodline would win. I told people that Austin Theory would win the U.S. Championship. I told people everything they need to know about Survivor Series, so we'll get to that. But this, Zach, this.
Yes.
I don't even know. Like, coming off the Pulp incident and coming off the Snickers incident, I didn't think you could follow this up with a trifecta, but I guess bad things, good things, all things come in threes. And so I'm just trying to understand some of your Zach McGibbon Fest.
Yes.
This is so hard. So you begin to look at it and you're like, okay, you have Kendrick Lamar as your main event. It's like the Bloodline's in the main event. Kendrick Lamar is headlining your show.
Yes. One of three nights, yes, of my three-night extravaganza.
Yes, which is followed up by System of a Down and MF Doom.
Yes.
Your great three pick. Headliners.
Correct. Based on how much I've listened, and this is in the last 6 months, by the way, for those wondering, because this app, it's not totally Spotify. It's kind of like a what do you call it? It's an addition to Spotify, but it's not from Spotify itself. The whole Spotify Unwrapped or whatever will be a little bit later. But it kind of takes in your listening data and then puts it all together. And this
first
is what
all, did you just say data as opposed to data? Like, you are an American.
data. Tomato, tomato.
Nobody says tomato. We've been over this. Nobody in their right mind says tomato.
I don't say tomato, but
nobody says tomato.
No.
Unless you're Italian, maybe.
Aren't you part Italian, Lee?
Yep. And I don't say tomato. So let's get to this list. Kendrick Lamar headlining.
Yeah.
MF Doom headlining.
Yes. Great so artist.
So you think on the night that MF Doom is playing as your headliner, and I don't know, as you see like the little tiny scribblings of the Tragically Hip, Michael Jackson, Disturbed, and Pat Benatar, and Kiss, and Prince, are all under
there as well.
Yeah, all under MF Doom and Paul Herzog. What in the world has happened to you since you moved to Belleville? Honestly,
I don't know. I see this as a fantastic lineup. I mean, man, I would sign up right away. Come on, man. Like MF Doom, you got Michael Jackson, you got Prince and Kiss and Disturbed.
You don't think that Michael Jackson or Kiss or The Hip or Disturbed should be headlining? Rage Against the Machine should be headlining? You think we're going to watch all those bands and then we're going to wait for Paul Herzog and MF Doom? That's what we're going to do? This is like going to WCW in 1995 and like, oh, I can't wait for the main event of what member of the Dungeon of Doom is going to face Hulk Hogan. Oh my God. It's the Zodiac tonight. The Zodiac's in the main event or whatever the hell they called Earthquake or whatever. Like Zach, this is WCW 1995. The people that are underneath, you know, the Eddie Guerrero's and the Rey Mysterio's and the Chris Jericho's and like, what in the hell is this?
It's based on how many hours you listen to these artists. So I listen to MF Doom a lot. I've been listening to a lot of MF Doom recently. And, you know, obviously got some Michael Jackson in there. Got some Run the Jewels as well. I mean, I don't know about you. This is a very impressive lineup. If it's just like banger after banger after banger, you're comparing it to WCW 1995. I see it more like a PWG card. Just an all-star lineup of just some all-star cast. Some of them could be main eventers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but Zach, if I'm going to this show, I'm leaving at the intermission once I've seen all of the good people.
Is this called Lever Sage Fest or is this called Zach McGibbon Fest?
Who the hell is Garth Knight?
Oh, it's a synth wave thing. I'm actually kind of shocked.
Oh, cool. Because you're Knight of System of a Down headlining over WWE.
Yeah, I did laugh at that. That made it.
Which is, you know, on the undercard, WWE.
Where they should be, to be quite honest.
Right. But. WWE, Phil Collins, Eminem, and AC/DC are like the lowest four on the middle night. But don't worry, Garth Knight and Death Grips.
Oh, Death Grips are fantastic.
They're just so fantastic.
they're really great. Good little rap group.
Yeah, little. Emphasis on little. Folks, I apologize, but this needed to be brought up because this is like the best I could compare it to is WCW of 95.
No,
where it's like on the undercard, there is some okay stuff. But when you start to get to the main event and I'm watching Dungeon of Doom, what are the names of Earthquake and Typhoon?
There was Shark, Kamala, the Zodiac.
Yeah.
Who else was in there? Haystacks Calhoun was somebody in there. I forgot what his name was in the Dungeon of Doom.
The Giant was in it for a bit.
Yeah. Kevin Sullivan, I should say. I don't see this as Dungeon of Doom. I see this as an all-star lineup, really.
Again, Zach, I'm leaving at the intermission because I've seen everyone I've wanted to see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've noticed you've been avoiding the first Kendrick Lamar headliner with the undercard being Metallica and Pantera and the Beastie Boys.
No, no, don't Rush, skip over Patrick
and
Judas Cowley.
Priest and Patrick Cowley as well.
Who the hell Rise is Patrick Cowley?
Is another 80s synth thing. But so Megadeth's on there. But
he's in the semi-main event. Let's look at your semi-main events. Yes. Garth Knight, Patrick Cowley.
Yes.
Paul Herzog. Like, who the hell are these people?
Well, again, this is my music festival. I'm booking this. You know what I mean? I'm the money mark here. And if I get to book my own show, this is what it would be. You know what I mean? Sure, I may not make a lot of money on it, but you know what? I look at this and I see this all-star lineup. You know, you're focused on card placement or whatever. I mean, come on. The fact that, you know, you've got a Michael Jackson on here. You've got a Kiss. You got a Prince. You got Pat Benatar, Metallica, Pantera, Ozzy Osbourne, Rush.
Michael Jackson is like introducing MF Doom as like the second band on the first night. Like,
well, openers can be in hot matches now. I mean, we're in a new era of card layouts in pro wrestling, so.
Not on your music festival, we're not. And this segues us into... Before we even do that,
I just want to ask one question, Lee. One question. Do you think Judas by Fozzy is a good song?
Let's segue into...
That's a yes, by the way.
Speaking about being the people who book everything, I think the Bloodline book every single angle they ever do.
Yes. I think with Heyman involved, I don't think you're that far off.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the main event, War Games. The Bloodline win. I mean, I told you that they would probably do something with Sami Zayn and end up winning, even though they shouldn't. They would. I told you that. You picked the other team, which is fine.
Didn't you pick the Bloodline as well? Or sorry, no, not the Bloodline. I thought you said you picked the Brawling Brutes and McIntyre. And
no, I said they should win. But yeah, every time we say that they should win, then the Bloodline ends up winning. And I could see a scenario that Sami Zayn's the hero. Sami Zayn's the hero.
Right. We were talking about that. I was like, you know what? I can get behind that. I could see that too. So
you were agreeing with me. Yes.
I was agreeing with you. I do remember that.
Yeah. With my pick, you were agreeing with me. So, okay. So what do you, I hate this. I hate it. Like every time I try and get into something like this, every time I'm like, okay, you can bring me back, but you better grab me while I'm back. Yeah. And then they'll do something to ruin it. So this was Saturday night. I didn't get a chance to watch it until Sunday, but I hated this.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I really did, because you can tell me about long-term storytelling. So I'm going to need you, because clearly with chocolate and like juices and music and like everything else in life, you're not very good at it. But with wrestling, you're really good at it. So you're going to have to tell me why this was good. You can tell me about long-term storytelling, but the long-term storytelling of not booking Kevin Owens properly in this match, yet they're probably going to go ahead with Kevin Owens, which will end up leading to like having no idea how this will go. And honestly, Zach, not having read anything about it, mm-hmm, I can tell you that Kevin Owens is going to get a shot, and then Sami Zayn is probably going to turn at some point, or the Bloodline will turn on Sami Zayn, and we'll do this whole Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn. I'm guessing Sami Zayn will get a shot in Montreal before Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, mm-hmm, go for the tag titles. But like, come on. Like, come on. Why should I think that Kevin Owens is going to beat Roman Reigns at the Royal Rumble with the way that they booked this match? Tell me, Zach McGibbon.
Well, you do make a good point on the Kevin Owens stuff. I think they could have had him come out a little bit stronger in this. I'm actually kind of surprised he hated this, because and I'm kind of surprised I'm saying this too, because I actually really liked this main event. With the caveat.
No, there's no caveat. No, hold on.
Zach. Oh, you've had the caveat the last time. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I understand, but I run this show. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, at least you admit it. So okay, I'll take that.
No, anyways, I think I sent you a video. And I thought you know what? You and I make a hell of a team. You should put that video out that I sent you on how you and I make such a good team, because there's actually, folks, a video of Zach and I like tagging together in the middle of a Royal Rumble, and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. We were dominant. We both got our moves in.
Yeah. It's like, unfortunate no one could see you, though. It was really saddening, but nonetheless.
John Cena and Hornswoggle. It was me and Zach.
I am not releasing the video. No way. Yeah.
Zach, just so you know, Zach, I know that you do a lot of the work here. I you know how much I love you for it. You and I were tight.
That is true. That is very true.
I can get that video out, Zach. It's like I don't need
you'll find you a way.
I don't need you to get the video out. So you can either put the video out of you and me, or I'll just get it out on my own, whichever you prefer. I can tell you it'll go worse for you if I have to do it on my own. That's all I'm telling you.
You know what? I actually kind of want to see how you're able to do it. So out of pure curiosity, I mean, it can't get possibly any much lower. So, I'll leave you to that task and we'll see where that goes. But,
Executive producer would be very happy to hear this.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, you're just going to get it through your executive producer. That's how it's going to be.
Our hardworking guy who commits to this show 24/7, our executive producer for life. That's right. And the executive director.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of talks the last couple of days.
Really?
So yeah, things are going in a good direction.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Usually it's the opposite, especially when it comes to the executive director, Samantha.
I understand. But ever since some willy-nilly trip to Florida for National Geographic, she's become a totally different person.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was saying that she's probably using TIW funds to pay off for her lavish vacations over in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, at a tiki bar somewhere, enjoying the nice sunshine. And
when you work hard, you get to deserve your riches, right? And I said, Samantha, you go and have a good time. I gave her some funds.
Wow.
No problem. Yep.
Okay. This is a revelation to me. I was not informed that that's where the TIW funds went to. My goodness. But
also, just as we're on like making sure hardworking people, so we've mentioned C. Bunda and Samantha Pope. They work very, very hard for this show. A lot of people work hard, Zach. A lot of people work hard. And then there's Sam McDade, who...
Wow. Okay. This is quite the opposite of what I was expecting going into the show.
Well, there's a lot of people, right?
What is going on? This is like opposite day for me. Like, what's going on here?
I had a really nice conversation once again with the big boss.
Okay.
And you know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Initials BG. The big boss.
That's right.
Of, you know, Pure Country in Ottawa and Kingston and everything that goes on at Brockville and all this. I had a great conversation with BG today.
Mm-hmm.
Inform me. Now, I was personally invited to our good friend Gord St. Denis's housewarming. Wasn't able to make it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you were invited too. Oh, right. No. That's okay. No,
I did not.
But I couldn't make it. But I was told that again. It's hard, right? Because when you're not there, you think you're going to be missed. And then you find out you're the kind of the hit of the party, even though you weren't there. So again, I was informed that I was the hit of the party and the talk of the party and, you know, what the incident that, you know, still has not been responded to, was brought up many times at the party.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice that Sam actually showed up to something. So that was good. But it was like our good friend, Gord St. Denis and Kim and a housewarming and the big boss was there. So she was telling me a lot of things and just, I'm a little worried about, you know, a little worried about some things now. That's all.
Okay.
You get what you pick up what I'm laying down, Zach?
I think I am. I think so. I mean, I wasn't there, so.
No, but this could all be remedied.
Okay.
By, you know, an appearance or two, because one of the most hardworking people I know, Sam McDade, Gord St. Denis, what a team. They work so hard. This could all be just be remedied, right?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if it is. Yeah.
All right. I like it.
We'll see if it is. They're number one in my books.
On your list?
So, Zach, last week we went into detail on our Survivor Series preview show. And at the end, all I said to you was the only thing that I wanted. The only thing that I wanted. I want you to go back and get the clip. The only thing that mattered was direction after the show to give us something to be interested in as we go into you. You agreed with me. It's the only thing that matters. Mm-hmm. No December pay-per-view, Royal Rumble. Have to have some intrigue into the one world title that the WWE has that there has been zero intrigue around. That's the only thing that I want from this show. And your words were, I totally agree.
Yes, I did say that.
Right. So I want you to explain how you really loved this.
Because I
when
saw
we got no direction and we didn't get the only thing that mattered.
Well, we may not have gotten a great direction for December or January. I'm not going to disagree with that. And this is where I say there's a caveat to it. I think the direction that has to be in place now, the way that the storyline is built is, and I know they're going to do Roman and Rock. I know that's probably going to be the big match at Mania if they're able to secure it. Roman Cody is probably another match that's being looked at. But the way this storyline is going, to me, you have to get on the Sami Zayn versus Roman Reigns eventual breakup of the bloodline and Sami Zayn challenging for the title at a future pay-per-view, whether it be Mania, probably not Mania. I would assume after Mania. And then
no, it'd be the one in Montreal, no?
Maybe the one in Montreal. You know, that's a good point because, you know, we were talking that maybe that they could do something like an Owens and Zayn versus the Usos. But it was actually pointed out that, you know, obviously with what one of the Uso brothers there, their recent troubles with the law, that they may not be able to go to Canada and wrestle. So you have to kind of change things up on that end. So I could see a Sami Zayn Roman Reigns match happening in Montreal, and yes. you could still do Roman and Rock, you know, just without the title, because that creates a lot more intrigue to me than
well,
Roman
what do you mean
Rock
without the title. Well, no. I guess I'm confused. What they didn't set any of this up. This is us guessing. They didn't set yes. any of this up. So there's no direction, and that's the only thing that I asked for. Is direction, and you agreed, and now we don't get any direction, but you're right. It'll be Kevin Owens at Rumble. It'll be Sami Zayn at whatever the... Is it Hell in a Cell or Elimination Chamber, whatever the yep. pay-per-view is, No Way Out, whatever.
Yes. Armageddon.
WrestleMania Revenge Tour.
Yeah.
But pre-WrestleMania Revenge.
Yeah. Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah. From the swamp, blah, yeah. blah, 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 blah.
Swamp fights.
So this probably leads to Rock and Roman for the title at WrestleMania with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn being in between. And I don't know. Like, are you telling me now that The Rock is going to win the Royal Rumble?
No. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying quite the opposite, actually.
How are they going to get this title off of Roman Reigns?
I think that they will do some form of the way to go is Sami Zayn taking the title off of Roman, the way that the storyline is built, and then you could somehow get to Roman Rock without the title at Mania. Because you've always preached, and I agree with you on it, that you want to make sure that you have something that's a little bit more unpredictable in your wrestling matches when you go in. Right. And I think we know that Rock would not win the title. We would know that. So yes. At least if you have that element of Rock versus Roman without the title, you could say, okay, Roman will maybe win, but hey, it's also The Rock. He's one of the biggest stars in WWE and whatever, so it creates a little bit more uncertainty. And you could have that crowning moment in Montreal with Sami Zayn winning. That's where I say the caveat is, because I'm not disagreeing with you in terms of short-term wise, this is kind of a odd choice to do. But I think, and I'm a little bit more confident with the Triple H regime than I would be with Vince McMahon, long-term wise, I think there is something that could be paid off, and that could be something really well done. Going back to the match, I thought from a storytelling aspect, there's been times with stuff that the WWE has done where I found the melodrama to be a little bit more forced, and they have the subtlety of a rocket launcher when it comes to their storytelling sometimes, where it's just so in your face. And they still have some elements of that in their storytelling nowadays. Now that Vince is gone, it's still there. But I thought the storytelling in this match was really well done. And I know some people were very confused about, you know, War Games historically, the advantage would always go to the heels, would always go to the heels. But in this case, the baby faces got the advantage. But I think the intriguing element of it was that Sami Zayn is the baby face in a heel group, you know?
Yeah.
And so I thought that sort of thing added a new twist to it that I actually thoroughly enjoyed. And I think looking at the way the story is, the next step of this Bloodline story is now that Sami Zayn has earned the trust of Jey Uso, now it's like you're going to have a couple of months of them being like the Bloodline for a little bit. Then some cracks start to form, and then you eventually get the Sami Zayn Roman Reigns match is where I think they are going. And I'm a little bit more comfortable saying that with this regime. But having said that, I have been burned before, and maybe
I appreciate, I know I've been making fun of you for about half an hour, but look, you are well thought out, and what you said is probably what should happen, but it's not going to. And I don't,
it's a grappling thing.
It makes perfect sense what you've said. Everything makes sense. I'm like, yes, except that's not going to happen. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Roman Reigns is going to be fighting The Rock at WrestleMania for the world championship.
Yeah.
And he's going to win. And that's it. Like, there is no other, especially, like, and you can tell me, I keep going back to this, and I feel like this is repeat again, and I hate doing it, but I'm not going to fall into it. I'm going to take them to task for it every time. This stupid company wants us to believe that we should ignore everything that is right about what should happen and just go along with them because they say so. I'm not going to do it. And so every time it happens, we needed clarity on what was going to happen with the world title. We needed clarity coming out of War Games that somebody was a legit challenger to that title. They don't have anybody.
Yep.
And when they don't have anybody now, that's a great scenario of Sami Zayn winning the title in Montreal. Not happening, Zach.
I know.
Not happening.
I want to believe in this new regime and think it's going to happen. And I want to believe that maybe The Rock, like, he can't be there for Mania, and this is the sort of backup plan. And it's surely, like, if something goes wrong, and God forbid something does go wrong where Rock can't do WrestleMania.
I'll tell you exactly how they get out of that. Cody wins the Rumble.
Yeah. That's another option.
And Cody wrestles for the world title at WrestleMania after winning the Royal Rumble, and people will start to believe that Roman could actually lose.
Mm-hmm.
But that's their backup plan. Because, okay, let me back up then. As they don't have another pay-per-view until the Royal Rumble, correct?
Correct. If you don't include the NXT show, but yeah, main roster, not until the Rumble.
So who's winning the Royal Rumble?
I would think you would have to start thinking about separating the belts, right? I mean, if you are setting up Roman Rock for the title, it would have to be The Rock, which I don't know how well that would go over with some fans, even though Rock is like a beloved babyface legend, obviously. I just don't know. Like, I feel like it should be Cody either way, winning the Rumble. I feel like that's the way to go. And then winning some form of a title. Because, you know, Roman still has both belts and they've kind of booked themselves in a corner.
But I'm not asking you what, and I want to be clear because a lot of what you say is correct. I'm not asking you what you think should happen. I'm asking you what you think will happen. And if you don't think that The Rock showing up as a surprise entrant and coming in and winning the Royal Rumble is going to get headlines, and he doesn't even have to wrestle until WrestleMania, where he's going to wrestle his cousin for the world title after 800 and whatever days of him having the title. Mm-hmm. Whatever else you think about what should happen, I probably agree with you. They should separate the belts. Maybe they should separate it in time to put one of the belts up for the winner of the Royal Rumble, which should eventually just be Cody.
Yep.
And you have Kevin Owens wrestling Roman Reigns for the SmackDown Championship and Cody winning the Raw Championship at the Royal Rumble by winning the Rumble. Mm-hmm. Those things should happen. But what's going to happen with no direction, zero challengers, is the fact that at WrestleMania, The Rock and Roman Reigns are going to wrestle for the world title, which means The Rock is winning the Royal Rumble and he's not even in the company.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't want this to happen, Zach, but I don't know that you could convince me otherwise, unless they do something drastic, which again, it's great for us to talk about and what they should do and how could they separate the belts and do it properly. And my God, imagine if Sami Zayn beat Roman Reigns for the title in Montreal and what that would do to the wrestling world. All of that's so great, but they're not doing it. This is the same company that we just said what should happen in Survivor Series is Kevin Owens or Sheamus or Drew McIntyre beating Roman Reigns and setting up a legitimate challenger. No. The Bloodline needs to win that too, because the Bloodline has to win everything.
Yeah.
So what we need is direction. What we need is a legit challenger. We need clarity coming out of Survivor Series. And we didn't get any.
Yeah.
So I know you look back on it and go, oh, they told a great story and they switched up the baby faces and the heels and super great. They didn't set up a legitimate challenger. They gave us no clarity, which means The Rock is winning the Rumble, because if they're able to secure The Rock, and this is all, I guess, precedented on the fact that they're going to get The Rock. I still feel like they are. I've been saying it for 2 years that The Rock and Roman Reigns were going to wrestle at WrestleMania.
Yep.
But if they're unable to get The Rock, they'll have to pivot. And how they'll pivot is Cody Rhodes winning the Rumble. And people will legitimately think that Cody has a chance at WrestleMania. And they won't split the belts. Yep. But I'd love to be proven wrong here. I really would, because anything other than what I just said is better. Anything. Anything.
Yeah.
Having Jay turn on the group and winning the world title would be awesome. Like, I know that won't happen, but I'm just saying, like, do anything.
Yeah.
I'm so frustrated by this company because they draw me back in a little bit, and I'm trying to go into it and look at it and go, I just want a legit challenger and I just want clarity and I just want the main event to make sense.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. So they might have had an A++ Meltzer 5-star match, but they didn't give me clarity and they didn't give me a legit challenger coming out of it. So I'm out. I know that's really simple.
That's totally fair. And look, I've pointed out before too that they are running thin on baby faces, and you were mentioning especially legitimate top level baby faces to compete against Roman and provide some form of thought that maybe they would win. And so I, again, no disagreements from me there. I just think that you could sacrifice the short term a little bit with this stuff if the long term of Sami Zayn winning the belt comes to fruition. If that happens, then I'm willing to kind of look back on this and say, okay.
Oh, 100%.
Right. And that's the caveat I've got. But otherwise, it's like, you know, just looking at it from like a pure match thing, I'm not looking at the future, not looking at the past, going into it, what was told here, the segments that they had beforehand, I was like, okay, I'm in. I'm very intrigued on this storyline where it's going. And the match itself, look, it wasn't a crazy high spot move, and that's totally okay. It was a storytelling match, and they got themselves over. And I thought in terms of enhancing the Bloodline storyline and continuing the Bloodline storyline, I thought it was a success. But as you mentioned, in terms of like viable contenders coming out of this and future title shots, and yeah, you're mentioning it's probably going to be Owens at the Rumble, or
right,
they may even do like a SmackDown thing or whatever, right? But
they're going to try and heat up. They're going to try and heat Kevin Owens back up.
Yeah.
So that people to put him in a world title spot with Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
When they could have had him pin Roman Reigns at War Games.
Yes.
And decided, no, that's not the best. And Sami Zayn will low blow him and blah, blah, blah. And then the Roman Bloodline will win again. But somehow we'll make you believe that Kevin Owens by the Royal Rumble has a legitimate chance. Why?
Right.
I hate that because I love Kevin Owens. I don't like, it's just, he's simply the next guy in line to really not be heated up at all, but to be placed in a spot where he's just eventually going to lose.
Yeah.
That's it. Because again, Zach, I'm going to ask you one more time, and you're not going to human haw, okay, and you're not going to be on the fence like you are in most of your football picks.
I make some pretty definitive picks, but nonetheless.
You do. What was your record this week?
I have not gone back to check, but it's actually pretty good this week, if I recall. So
you picked Jacksonville to beat Baltimore then?
I did not.
No,
I did not.
You picked Cleveland to beat Tampa then?
I did not.
No, you didn't do that either.
I picked Pittsburgh over Indianapolis. Indianapolis was
favorite. My God.
So,
Zach, they were like 2-point favorites with a coach that's ever coached a game in his life other than the week before.
I know.
You're patting yourself on the back about Kenny Pickett.
I think he's getting better each week, Kenny Pickett.
Do you know that? Let me throw this football stat because I thought that this was neat.
Sure.
Teams have come back from 10 or more points to win a game this year through 12 weeks. How many teams?
That have come back?
Been down at least 10 in a game to come back and win the game. How many times has that happened so far this year?
How many times has that happened? It's been quite a bit. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens alone could in terms of like how many times they've blown a lead.
You do need to look under Baltimore Ravens losses and add that number in, because it's like every loss they've had is like that.
Yes. It's been quite a bit. I don't know the exact number. You got to tell me.
No guess.
Oh man. I'll go with 15. That's the over under.
Okay. How about 36?
Oh my goodness. Double that. Jeez.
36 times in 12 weeks. That has happened in the NFL. So crazy. Don't say you don't learn something here on This Is Wrestling. Listener, Zach. I was talking about the listener.
Sometimes I don't know when the bit against me ends and where.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole beauty of this, Zach. There's always, it's like wrestling, right?
It's true. Like,
If you blur the lines enough, it's like I did see Bray Wyatt's image behind Alexa Bliss last night on Monday Night Raw. I was like, that's exciting.
Yeah. Remember when he was the hottest thing in the company?
Yeah. You know what was not exciting? The women's, even with Becky Lynch, the women's War Games.
Yeah. It was just like, I was waiting for when the first kendo stick would get thrown in. and they were just waiting for it. And it was a little later than I expected, so I got to give them props for that. But it was still like, then there's the garbage can, then there's the tables. Like, yep, that's what Dusty Rhodes envisioned for War Games, the kendo stick and the table and the garbage can. It's exactly what War Games was meant to be. I had no strong feelings of the women's War Games whatsoever. I was just kind of there for me.
And what about our man? You and I both picked Austin Theory to win the United States Heavyweight Championship, and he did.
That's right. Not only did I pick Austin Theory to win, but I also picked him to pin Seth Rollins and Lashley get saved. And so not to take the pin. So I'm doing pretty good on that prediction. I thought that match was pretty good. I liked it. It was a good back and forth. Sometimes I have an issue with Rollins in terms of like whatever the storyline is. He just kind of wrestles the same match, kind of going back to the Riddle stuff. But in this case, it's like it's not really that crazy of a feud. So you can go out there and do a little bit more of a high work rate energy match. And I thought this was a fun match. I like the changes to the character for Theory. It seems a little bit more focused now, and it's not as comedic as he was before. I think that was really kind of holding him back. And I think we're going to gradually see some sort of a babyface turn for Seth Rollins in the near future based on the crowd reactions here. And Lashley did what he needed to do. He wasn't extraordinary, but he wasn't bad either. I thought it was a fun little triple threat match. It was a nice little US title match. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the finish, because I've heard some people love it and some people absolutely hate it.
I'd love to hear the people that absolutely hate it. Why would they hate it?
I've just thought kind of the fluky way that it happened, you know what I mean? And it was one of those deals where it's like it could have been a little bit more of a definitive pin for some. Because I've heard both. Maybe I'm just kind of in my weird, odd end of the wrestling community. But
no, I mean, it's great to hear all opinions. But I think if you look at how they're going to put Austin Theory over, I think that's they needed to do that. Like Austin Theory needed to win. We both agreed. And I will applaud them at least on that they needed to change his character. They needed people to start believing in. They needed to start thinking that Austin Theory wasn't a joke, and they've been able to transform that, and it was the right thing to do to put the title on them.
Yeah,
so mission accomplished. So again, I try and look at this a little bit more black and white to go, okay, you embarrassed Austin Theory, and you've made what was, you know, a pretty good prospect coming up, you've turned him into an absolute joke. You need to do something to fix that. And at the end of it, he's got the U.S. title, and he's, you know, has a win and a pin over Seth Rollins and with Bobby Lashley, and I think is coming out a stronger guy. He didn't have to dominate, or it's not like he needed, like, a fluky win for me is, okay, yeah, like, it's Seth freaking Rollins and Bobby Lashley. Like, did you think Austin Theory was just going to, like, walk around the ring with them for 10 minutes before he pinned them? Like,
right.
No.
Yeah.
The right thing to do is put the title on him, but you are protecting two of your top guys in the company, and you had to do that and still get the title off of them. It's like, I don't know. That one to me is being overcritical if you didn't like that, because the right thing to do at the end of the day was to try and save Seth Rollins and Bobby Lashley as much as you can with putting Austin Theory in a much better position. They did that.
Yep. I agree. I like the finish the way that they're kind of building it. And I think in terms of WWE finishes that I've seen, it's far from the worst I've seen from WWE when it comes to finishes that they book. So I liked it. I thought the match was well done. This was actually a real pick me up period of this show, because the other matches, other than the main event, one was, I just really didn't do much for me.
So AJ Styles, Finn Balor.
It just didn't get into another gear for me. Like,
yeah, I agree.
It was technically fine. Like, I just like they, it's not like what I saw was horrible. It was just like, they kind of went there. They worked a hold. They did the slow build, you know, and then they do the throwing of ropes. Oh, big move. And then I got to showboat a little bit, go play to the crowd. And then I'll go back to work a hold and just kind of the slow build. And I thought when AJ hit the forearm that we were getting into the, all right, we're going up another gear. Here we go. We're going to get a great match. And then he pinned him clean. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that was the match then. I mean,
I'm getting a little worried about AJ Styles.
Mm-hmm.
In too many matches now, you're just, and look, it's an expectation because he's one of the greatest to ever do it.
Yep.
But you're waiting for him to get to another gear. And with some guys, you're like, okay, can he get to another gear? Okay, well, I'll blame the other guy. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm not blaming Finn Balor, and I'm not blaming, you know, certainly in his matches with Shinsuke, and those were a while ago, but boy, I've wanted more out of AJ Styles.
Yeah.
The last of the while, he just doesn't seem, it's not the first time we've talked about him in a match not getting to another gear. That's all. And I'm not being super critical. I love AJ Styles. I want to see AJ Styles more in prominent positions, but when he gets there, I'd like to see his matches kick to that next gear. That has not happened.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm glad you brought it up, because I actually remember when I was at SummerSlam in Toronto a couple of years ago, when it was he versus Ricochet, and I was like, oh, they're doing some technically good stuff here, and then just waiting for that next level, and it just never came. And so, yeah, I'm wondering if it's like, he is getting up there in age. He's in his early to mid 40s in terms of active in-ring career. So, I mean, it's not like he's going out there embarrassing himself or anything like that. He's still very capable wrestler. It's just, we were kind of going in, it was a slow build. I'm like, okay, they're going to build up to something, I guess. Then they had some of the interference spots as well. But then it just really never, it ended. And I was like, okay, I mean, It was a match that was my feeling. That was a match that I watched on a WWE pay-per-view. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just a match. And so that's it is what it is.
Never like finishing an AJ Styles review with it is what it is.
I know. I hate saying that too. I've seen him in Japan. I loved him in Japan with New Japan. He had that great career resurgence there. You mentioned the match with Shinsuke Nakamura later on WWE, but his match with him at Wrestle Kingdom 9, I want to say, was just like, oh, it's so good. And then now just kind of seeing it like this, it's like he's fitted the WWE style a little bit, which is fine. But you know, he's not been able to get into another gear in some of his matches. It's starting to become more and more apparent as the years go on.
Anything else you want to talk about from, like, what am I missing?
We got to talk about Ronda Rousey versus Shotzi.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, can I say that was the worst match of the year?
Oh my God. Like,
it was so bad.
I know. And no wonder why I forgot about it. but you're right, I shouldn't have. But I had my bar was so low on this one, I just didn't even care.
Yeah. Oh, this was a bad match. It was like, it's legitimately one of the worst matches of the year. I mean, Rousey, like, I think we got to call it out. This is not the same. We've mentioned a couple of times, but we have to really definitively say it now. Not only is she not the same wrestler as she was in her first run, and she wasn't even that great in the first run either. She had some like moments where it's like, okay, if she continues at this, she could get really good. And she's got a good crew in WWE that they're very good at like helping out outsiders come in and build a match. But now in this second run, I think her star power is gone. I don't think people really care that Ronda Rousey's in WWE anymore. And she's not that good of an in-ring performer to kind of counteract that. I mean, I think it's time to cut bait with her, to be quite honest. Because like, she's not shown significant improvement. Obviously people talk about that spot, that DDT spot where she just like totally like had the arm around the rope and just did not commit to the DDT spot. I was like, oh my God, if you're not going to commit to it, don't do the spot. Like, somebody communicate not to do the spot. But I will not let Shotzi off the hook of this either. Cause I think more people need to realize that Shotzi's not great of a wrestler either. So many times I've seen her and I think there's like a character wise, I think she's very likable and you could get behind her as a babyface, but as an in-ring wrestler, I don't think she's good at all. Like, there was another spot that does not get talked about, but you know, the Shayna Baszler suplex spot that they did on the outside. She does the suplex to Shotzi. Shotzi like takes the bump, but then gets back on her feet, and then pretends to like roll, and then rolls into the ring, and then so that she could beat the 10 count. Then rolls right back, and then just doesn't sell the suplex like it didn't happen. Like, yeah. Like okay, like why do that spot too? I mean, and then of course they try to get something going. They threw. They did that dive into the crowd with a not plants at all section of the audience. Oh, this was a bad match. This is like, you're going to see this on a lot of worst match of the year ballots. It was a bad match. And to the point where I'm like, yep, I think we know what we got with Rhonda now. And I've given her a couple of months to kind of get her back into the flow of things, but now we're getting close to a year and it's like, man, I don't think it's coming back. I don't think this first run Rousey's coming back. So I think they got to cut bait. She's not the same star she was beforehand either. So I this was a bad match.
Yep. And they have themselves to blame. They got a half-assed Ronda Rousey and yep. They put her in there with Shotzi, who's not probably ready for that moment. Mm-hmm. And when I say ready for the moment, it doesn't mean that she's not ready at other points, but with a half-assed Ronda Rousey, you got to carry her now.
Yep.
So now yep. You have to have people in there that can absolutely carry her. And in that women's division, you don't have that many people that can do that.
Yep. It's true. It's very true.
And so they have only themselves to blame for all of this.
Totally. I think the only match they're saving Rousey for is to finally do the Becky Lynch Ronda Rousey match that was supposed to happen back in 2019, 2020. Or sorry, 2019, I should say. And try and salvage it. And then I think you got to move on from her at this point. It's just, I liked some of the character tweaks that they're doing. They were finally letting her be a heel. And she is so clearly much more natural as a heel than she was as a babyface.
Very unlikable, Zach.
Yes.
Very unlikable.
Yes. I can only imagine why, but she, you know what? You got to, take advantage of the strengths that they have. And in this case, Ronda Rousey is a very good heel. And I think the last thing that they have on the plate is Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey. Anything else, including Charlotte Flair, is a no-go for me. Like if it's Bailey versus Rousey, as I mentioned earlier, or anybody else, it has to be Becky and Rousey, because that's where the money is left with Rousey at WWE. And then you move on from her, because it's getting pretty clear. And I've been around, and look, I was a Rousey defender in her first run. I thought people were being way too critical and not understanding how important she was in that first run for WWE. I mean, they're not doing the Evolution pay-per-view without Rousey. I'm telling you this right now. And that, and also try to save some PR for the Saudi Arabia stuff as well, obviously. But in this run, that star power is gone. Nobody is talking about her in like ESPN or anything like that. You can't even use that excuse anymore. So I think it's time to move on.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I just don't know for what you're getting, why you would continue on with it.
Yep.
Be there with people that want to be there. And if you have a committed star that wants to be there, okay, but they don't.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a lot of WWE talk the last couple of episodes for, like, I was mad because I just don't even, and, you know, I kind of flipped through Raw last night and I don't know, like, it's still the same old, right? Like,
yep.
Good to see the Street Profits mid-carding against nobody again. Like, good. It's like, oh yeah, they're still there. You know, guys that they're supposed to be really good, but they're just toiling away. You know, I know Kevin Owens won last night and beat Jey Uso in the main event, but I don't know. I thought maybe we'd get away from the OC and the Judgment Day, but no.
It's okay though, Lee. We're gonna get Eli Drake, LA Knight versus Bray Wyatt. The match that people have been clamoring for. And just wanting, and just the momentum that Bray Wyatt has brought. I said like 3-6 months before people fizzle out, I should have undersold it. It's been a month and nobody cares. It's like, because it's the same. It's like, what did I say on this show? That Bray Wyatt gets into a tendency where he just blabbers on and then he starts to spin into a circle and there's no progression with the story, right? I've been saying that. That's been the thing for Bray forever, is that he's got these great ideas, quote-unquote great ideas, and then he's able to continue it on for a little bit. Then he's clear. He starts to kind of run out of ideas, and then he kind of ends up in a circle and just kind of keeps going around that circle. Well, now we're only a month in and he's already in a circle talking about battling himself and blah, blah, blah. I mean, really just riveting stuff that they do every week. I mean, to be honest, like nobody is talking about Bray Wyatt anymore, not even on their own show. Like he had one of the hottest entrances out of the pay-per-view. Even I could admit that. And what have they done?
They're not talking about anybody except for the Bloodline, because the Bloodline doesn't want anyone else talking about anyone else except the Bloodline. So the Bloodline's going to put the Bloodline over, and then the Bloodline will win again, and then whoever else is there will just show up and talk themselves into the spinning circle. Zach, put me in a better mood. I do want to just a quick hello to a couple of people. Today, on the drive, got to come back with a little MJF music.
Nice.
And I asked on the drive, I didn't say that it was that. I'm like, just somebody tell me what this is. First person to respond, Postman Yan.
Love it. Yeah. Postman Yan, baby.
He was right there. And you know what? He's a beauty. So want to say hello to him. I want to say hello to my good friend, Keeley, who I think is just an amazing, amazing listener in person. And, you know, we're tight.
That you didn't put her on your team.
Listen, we're tight. We have an understanding. And, so I just wanted to say hello to her. And then, like, come on. Le Champion has just been killing it. The promos have been exquisite.
Yeah.
He's been dominating. Like, it's almost a little Bloodline-ish. It's a little Bloodline-ish. And I don't want to say, like, sometimes he's feeling oozy, but sometimes he's feeling, like, what do I say? Thompson-y?
Thompson-y? Champion-y?
He's feeling a little champion-y. You know, like, he gets a little full of himself, but you know why? Because he can. Because he sits on top. Up. Because he backs it up and he just keeps going and going and going. So a shout out to Le Champion, who doesn't get enough credit sometimes for carrying the ship.
Well, like shout out to Le Champion. How about that?
Yeah. And how about, let's put everyone in a better mood. Stop you talking about Bray Wyatt and open up your book of lists.
All right. So let's get the book of lists out. Let's do it.
So all for right. People who don't know, Zach created a book of lists about, I don't allegedly. Know. No, Zach, stop allegedly. Like, we know you're Hornswoggle. We know you created the book of lists. Stop saying allegedly with all of this stuff.
I'm not
Zach created a book of lists before he left. And Steve Bunder, that's why he worked so hard, executive producer extraordinaire, found it. And now we're revisiting the list, and we're going to like redraft. We're going to relist.
Yep.
And we're going to do this as Zach just opens the book here and just picks out any page. So hold it up, Zach.
Yep. Okay? You can see it on camera. You can verify the validity of this.
Yep. Yep. You're not looking. So just open looking. It up to a random page and hold it up to the camera, Zach. Here we go. Drum roll.
Hopefully it's not the same list from last week.
Put it near the camera.
Okay.
I can't see that far, Zach. Come on.
All right. I've got to try to get under the microphone. Can you see it?
Appearances by wrestlers on TV shows.
Oh.
Okay. So put it a little closer. Let's look. Okay. And let me read the list. Zach. Well, obviously, Thunder in Paradise with Hulk Hogan, number one.
You're going to notice a trend with some of these lists. But yes.
Zach, a big Hulk Hogan fan. Ken Shamrock on That 70s Show.
Yep.
A little high, I think. So we'll have to. The Miz on Psych.
Mm-hmm.
Hold it a little bit more. Yeah, okay. Lita on Dark Angel. Mick Foley on Avatar.
The Last Airbender.
The Miz on Psych makes again it 3 and 6. I knew you're a Miz fan. Vader on Boy Meets World. Yeah. Edge on Haven. Mm-hmm. Triple H on The Drew Carey Show. Bret Hart on The Simpsons. Your top 10.
Yes.
I'm wondering why with a top 10 list that one had to make it twice. the Miz on Psych. So first of all, you need to explain that in your thinking.
Well, look, I mean, when you love a performance so much and you really want to give it some acknowledgement, some credit, sometimes you got to put it on twice. And I think that's, you know, I'm trying to go back to the mindset of when these lists were made so many years ago. It feels like forever ago. But, you know, I just kind of looked at it and I was like, you know what? The Miz deserves credit. And so, I felt it was appropriate to have him at both 3 and 6. That is my line of thinking, my alleged line of thinking into my alleged list.
Okay. All right. I don't love this list.
Okay. Yeah. I figured you wouldn't.
No, I don't. I don't love the list.
Okay. What are you relisting? What am I missing? Because clearly I've got 2 slots taken up by 1. So I'm surely I'm missing something. I'm allegedly missing something.
First of all, you're missing a couple of like classic like shows from before. So I'm a big I was a big Charmed fan.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, you know, Lisa Milano, Shannon Doherty. You know how it goes. Mm-hmm. Booker T, Scott Steiner, and Buff Bagwell make an appearance, mm-hmm. And I thought it was incredible. Incredible.
That's right.
I popped for that myself. So mm-hmm. I don't know why that didn't make your list, and then. Also, the Bushwhackers on Family Matters.
Okay, yeah, that's a notable one. I probably wouldn't put it on my list, but I mean, I didn't. But good call out there.
You also put one on your list twice.
That's right.
Right. I'm a little bit confused about, like, I thought Edge on Vikings was good.
Oh, yeah, good pick.
But you picked Edge and somewhere else.
Yes. I believe that is a USA Network original show, Haven.
Okay. You know that The Miz in Psych was not the only wrestler on that, right?
Look, I love The Miz's performance. Any other wrestler really would just be nothing in comparison. So.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put a little Steve Austin, Nash Bridges on the list, and I'm also going to put probably my favorite one that I can't believe you missed. Uh-huh. One of my favorite shows, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, yes.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Great pick. Ah, that's a great pick.
So, a show I love with a wrestler I loved. Mm-hmm. So, that would be... So, I would move Hulk Hogan down. Probably off of the list. Good thing you had The Miz on twice, which I think is notable. Mm-hmm. But if people have some other suggestions, but I'm Roddy Piper, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I love It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Great show. That is a great show. Can I throw out a couple other suggestions as well?
Well, yes, it's your list. So like if you've had some time to think about this, I would hope you have some other suggestions after reading that list.
I have thought about it a little bit. There's a skit that Triple H did on, it wasn't SNL, but it was the Mad TV show that he did that was very, very funny of him being a wrestling coach. He was this athletic nerd on that show. So I recommend people seek out that bit. Do you count Tank Abbott on that episode of Friends as well on that, or do you not count that?
I do not count that.
You do not count that. Okay. Cause that was another one I was thinking, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, I would move up the Bret Hart appearance on The Simpsons all the way, probably to number 1, because that's an all-time. I mean, first of all, Bret Hart, Secondly, it's The Simpsons. I mean, you have to watch The Simpsons. Let's get it out there. You have not seen The Simpsons. So you have to go see The Simpsons. One of the best TV shows. Between seasons 2 and 9, I want to say, are like the real peak of The Simpsons. Everything else you can skip. But yeah, I would put that up there as well. I'm trying to think of some other great wrestler appearances. I probably put the Vader on Boy Meets World episode up a little bit higher too. Again, with the benefit of hindsight. Yeah, those are a couple that I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay.
The Rock on SNL, like wrestler Rock on SNL. That was a fun time.
That's a little different because SNL is just different. Like they have all kinds of, I feel like that's not.
That doesn't count. That's fair.
Yeah. I feel like SNL is a little different, but.
Mick Foley on Avatar, The Last Airbender. I will say it was kind of funny. That show is fantastic, by the way. If you've not seen Avatar, The Last Airbender, it's a great show for everybody, like kids and adults alike. But Mick Foley plays like a earthbender on the show that has the same mannerisms as The Rock, but he calls himself The Boulder, and it's a very entertaining character. So I probably move that up a little bit more as well. There's some good ones that, you know, with a good look back. Ken Shamrock on That 70s Show is a nice little callback. That was actually an underrated appearance. Probably should have made that number one on my list, right, Lee?
Not a big Ken Shamrock guy, but yes, it was a good appearance on that show.
Yeah.
So anytime that can, you know, the good shows, I think if it's a good show and there's a wrestler on it, it almost, it's like, okay, that's going to be on there. Cause there's some bad shows on your list. some bad shows on your list.
You mean to tell me Dark Angel is a bad show or Sight?
Yes. Yes.
Or Thunder in Paradise.
Yes.
Or Haven.
Yes.
I think the Drew Carey show is okay. It's not bad. It could be worse. He's much better on Whose Line Is It Anyway, Drew Carey, than his own show. But
much better.
Much better.
And he's much better than his stupid lines on Price is Right. But
yes. He's no Bob Barker, that's for sure.
Shaq, this is gonna be another moment where I'm going to predict. Okay. Oh, so I'm just so okay. You, I'm gonna write something. I predict everything about you.
Yes.
Because I just know how your mind works. Okay. So I've written something down here.
Okay.
Then I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Price is Right.
Okay.
Go ahead. Favorite game. Go. Think about it. Don't think about it. Just whatever comes to mind. What's your favorite game? The one that you like to watch on Price is Right. Go.
Blanco.
So Zach, I'd like to.
It's play. You wrote down Blanco, didn't you?
Zach, yeah. If I knew how to turn the camera here,
there should be a third camera option on there.
How do I turn the camera?
I'll see it on your angle. You could like turn around.
No, I'm gonna get into the 21st century here and. Just find out where do you do that? Where do you turn the camera?
This is the drum roll section of the reveal.
No, honestly, you're watching me right now. I'm not.
I am. I will
say. How do you turn the camera?
I don't know. You raised your hand.
I'm realizing what that is.
You raised your hand. So now when you want to get something in, you could raise your hand on the show if you wanted to. I'm pretty sure there's like a turn camera option in there.
You would think.
There it is. There we go.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, it's Plinko, isn't it?
Zach, can you see the, what does that say?
Lee, I can confirm that it's a little fuzzy, but I can make out that it says Plinko.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because
that was the first thing that came to my mind, and I was like, don't say it.
You are so goddamn predictable. It's just ridiculous, Zach. Like, Plinko is the worst game.
Oh,
it's
come on.
The worst. No, Zach, it's the worst one. And I know it's like anyone that has half a brain goes, that's the worst one. But then the other half's like, oh, Blinko, I love it when they get up there and you don't know where it's going. And like, oh, it's going to go up. Oh, it goes to zero. Oh, my God.
I didn't realize the other half is from Quebec. That's quite something.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, on your book of lists, the yodel lady, yo, with the guy going up the hill. And yeah, you don't know whether he's going to stop or not. And then he falls off the cliff is easily the best game.
Yeah.
Followed by hole in one or two, where Bob rams it in the hole. When Bob Barker was on, he used to ram that ball in the hole and show people what is up on the golf course. Okay. That guy could read greens like nobody else. Okay. So there's those two. Old lady, oh, and the guy's going up, and you're like, oh my God, is he going to stop? Is he going to stop? And then the one that gets me the most, which should be higher, but Bob reading the greens, and when he taps the thing, a hole in one or two, is incredible. Yep. It's incredible. It's like people never see it coming. And it's like, have you not watched a show ever? And there's those, but the one where they have to put, there's like six products and they have price tags and they got to put the right price tag and then run back to the thing and pull the big lever where, and on like a 6 foot tall thing, it tells you how many you got right and how many are still wrong. You still have like, if you run and you pull the lever and you still have 20 seconds, you can go back and switch them. Mm-hmm. It is incredible to watch how out of breath people are in like 32 seconds. It's like they've come back to this lever twice. They're exhausted. It's like, what are you doing? Just go put anything there, pull the lever and go and switch them. Like you got three or four chances here, but no, they never do. They only get there twice. They pull the lever and it's like one out of six. It's just incredible theater, though. It's incredible theater. But yes, let's all be boring ass and watch somebody drop a stupid circle onto a bunch of greased pegs, which are always going to fall in the zeros, and think that that's really exciting. But don't worry, Zach. I predicted that you would say Blinko.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the grocery game. Checkout, I think it's what it's called.
Incredible, Zach. I feel so good about this.
Oh, I know. And I was like, you know what? I'll just commit to Blinko and just take the heat because I've just been taking the heat the last couple of weeks. So what's another week?
Incredible stuff where Snickers and Extra Pulp and Blinko just continue to dominate the headlines.
Yeah, I think Orange Cassidy's got to change his name. I'm the orange juice guy around here now. Whether it be fancy orange juices or extra pulp orange juices, I'm the guy that knows his orange juice, I will say.
Yeah, well, you can call me Roman freaking Reigns and the bloodline for being the one that controls everything and being able to predict and write the scripts before they actually happen.
Yeah. Did you want to get to questions or I think we got some time, but
Zach, and I'm begging you. Okay. Yeah. I'm begging you.
Yeah.
I would like to get to questions, but there better be good questions.
Okay. These are actually pretty good, I think.
I'm going to stop the questions okay, if they're not good. So you better sort through them. Don't ask one from the man with no excuses, Jonathan Excuse, because whatever he wrote is probably terrible. Yeah. So let's just skip over his right away. And okay, then
I was just going to say he didn't send one in this week. So you're okay on that one.
Okay. Go ahead, Zach. What's the best question that we got?
All right. Before we even get to that, you can send in your questions to our social media at TIWTSN on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, or you can send an email at
lee.versage@bellmedia.ca.
I'm going to put my team on the line here and start with Ben Sublier. That's how confident I am in this question. He sends a question on Twitter.
Nice to hear from him after like months in the dark. It's like watching AEW Dark.
Ah.
Hearing from, it's a good show.
Yeah.
But like whoever sees it. Go ahead, Ben.
you get a lot of QT Marshall on AEW Dark. But
just so you know, Ben, you're leader just compared you to QT Marshall.
Okay. That's not what I said. That's not what I said. You're twisting my words. But anyways, Ben says, can't remember if you guys have specifically answered in the past, but what match got you hooked on wrestling? Not necessarily the best or your favorite match, but wondering if you could pinpoint a match. For him, it was watching Edge and Christian win the titles at WrestleMania 2000. I had been a casual fan up until that point, but then watched everything religiously afterwards. Also, Zach can't use the CM Punk pipe bomb as his answer.
Oh, he got a can't use the MJF can't use the paradigm shift and John Moxley there.
Oh, yeah, got that gimmick in. Yeah, I mean, it's not a mash, so how could I put it in? But nonetheless,
all right, well, it got put in. So this is an interesting question, actually, from a guy that I didn't think was possible, but every now and again he surprises me a little bit. So this is an interesting question because I grew up in the era of sort of being fascinated a little bit by things that I'd never seen before. So I was like a kid that would get up and watch AWA on TSN at like 6 a.m. That's when it would air, and not even in the, like the VCR stage really of, like, I would just get up and watch it before I would go to school. But the one that hooked me, because I used to go to the video store and rent Coliseum Video, right? Mm-hmm. Where they had, like, you know, started with like WrestleMania 1 coming out on VHS. And then, you know, I went to the big event at 1986 at the CNE, and then that came out on Coliseum Video, and they used to have, you know, best of the WWF volume 1 and volume 2 and all this stuff. But I think the match that I really remember going, the hell's going on right now? And I watched this match so many times, and it wasn't the best match, but it was the match that I remembered to be like, okay, I'm intrigued, and this mattered to me. So more than Hulk Hogan, the match that stood out to me was Tito Santana and Greg the Hammer Valentine in the match in where Tito Santana defeated Greg the Hammer Valentine for the Intercontinental title. And I don't know if you remember this, Zach. I believe it was at MSG, but I could be mistaken. Mm-hmm. It was inside of a steel cage, and Greg the Hammer Valentine lost. And when he lost, he grabbed the Intercontinental Championship and started smashing it over and over, and literally like ripped the stuffing out of the belt and ruin the belt. And it was kind of like, if I'm not champion, you're not going to get this belt. You're not going to be able to call yourself a champion either. And I was amazed at like the rage that he had. And I thought it was so cool that he literally ruined the belt. And it was clear, you know, afterwards, when you get a little bit older, you realize, okay, well, they had a new Intercontinental Championship belt that they wanted to introduce, and the old one they were just done with. But that's how they were going to get rid of the old belt. I loved it because Tito Santana walked around as the Intercontinental Champion without a championship, because Greg the Hammer Valentine had ripped this thing to shreds. It was green, it had pink stuffing coming out of it, and I was fascinated by that. So it wasn't the best match, but I remember it very, very, very well. And then for me, it starts to get into right around 1985, which was also the time in which the Macho Man had started to come into wrestling, into the WWF at the time, and introduce Elizabeth. And one of the matches that I remember the most, or it wasn't a match, it was, what did they call it? The event, it was at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And it was like a King of the Ring, but before, what was it called? It was a tournament, and I watched that tournament 100 times. And in the final, the Junkyard Dog beat the Macho Man by count out, which I thought was like terrible for a final. But along the way, the Macho Man had beat Ivan Putski. He had beat Ricky Steamboat in the second round. And then he beat the Dynamite Kid in the semifinals. As he turned the superplex into a pin, he got superplexed, but turned it into a pin. And it was just, well, the Junkyard Dog got a bye because Moondog's spot left or something. And Moondog's spot beat Terry Funk. And Nikolai Volkov got stood up and was singing the national anthem. And the Dynamite Kid drop kicked him off the top rope while he was singing the national anthem and beat him in 8 seconds. But all of this stuff, and I just, for the life of me, I can't remember what the event. I guess I could look it up, but that event in 1985, along with the Greg the Hammer Valentine, the stuffing out of the belt, are the two kind of things that hooked me the most. And then I just got into it and followed it all the time from there. So like, there are other great matches after that or other things I remember, but those are probably the two that got me into, okay, I need to follow this more.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I was kind of searching up that Valentine story because yeah, I remember the, you know, reading up about the Intercontinental belt smashing thing. Just kind of funny how Valentine's career has been, because he was also the guy that broke Wahoo McDaniel's leg as well.
Yeah.
So he has a propensity for smashing things in his career. But no, that's interesting. Obviously, mine is going to be a little bit more modern, but. You know, I mentioned multiple times on the show about the CM Punk pipe bomb thing, but that was more like my introduction into wrestling, just being like, oh, like this is kind of different. This is kind of
the wrestling classic.
The wrestling classic. Oh, the tournament. That's right. Yeah.
Cause that's what the tournament was called.
Cause I was thinking, I was like, that sounds like King of the Ring to me, but the wrestling classic. Okay. There you go.
It was called the wrestling classic.
Perfect. There you go. So you could search that up on the network, I would assume.
Oh, yeah. And it's the Dynamite Kid. And you also get to see some callbacks, which is kind of cool. It's like, so the Macho Man beat Ricky Steamboat in the second round for the exact same way that he beat Tito Santana for the Intercontinental title. I'm assuming 6-8 months later, because it was in 86, but literally like into his tights, picks him up, suplex, clocks him. Referee doesn't see it, pins him, rolls out of the ring, tosses the knucks out of the ring, like exactly the same ending.
Yep.
He beat Ricky Steamboat in the second round of a tournament, and then he won the Intercontinental title that way. It was like, okay, that worked.
Yeah.
So I think things like that are really kind of cool to see.
Yeah, 100%.
Anyway, sorry.
No, it's all good. I'm glad, because I was trying to think in my head, it's like, because I thought it was maybe King of the Ring, but I was quickly searching through some results like, no, it can't be King of the Ring. So that's good. The wrestling classic. Yeah, in terms of like my sort of introduction, I mean, it's now it seems like a joke now, but in terms of what Ben was saying, but yeah, it was like, in terms of like really getting into it and really digging into like newsletters and learning about wrestling history, it was actually for a match that a lot of people hated. And that was the initial 2014 Royal Rumble when Batista won it. Because that was the Daniel Bryan elevation stuff. And I had been getting invested in the Bryan stuff when he, obviously he cashed in, they were doing the cocky world champion thing. He was starting off the Yes thing, and it was starting to get really over. And then obviously the Sheamus and match at Mania where he won in 18 seconds kind of elevated, Daniel Bryan in a weird way. But I guess it really just kind of came down to that Royal Rumble 2014 was when I really kind of broke into like following everything when it comes to like wrestling business and storylines and history, because I couldn't believe that the WWE at the time decided that Batista was the right winner to win that match, considering how hot Daniel Bryan was getting and the crowd actively going against it. And it just kind of led to me kind of researching more information on why WWE wanted to make this decision, and then getting a little bit more into like Dirt Sheets and like the Observer and the Torch and all that. So I would probably credit that it kind of in a similar way, where it's like, it wasn't necessarily a match where it was like a next level technical masterpiece or anything like that. It wasn't even like a one-on-one match. It was just that Rumble match just kind of got me into like listening to different podcasts about it, then kind of getting interested of like listening back to booking patterns and whatever. So I'd probably credit that for really getting into the nitty gritty of everything. And then when things, when they started to course correct, because Punk left after that Rumble, and they realized we should have to save this somehow when it came to Mania, and then putting Daniel Bryan into the opening match with Triple H, and then the triple threat match main event later on that night. It is still out there on YouTube, Lee. I did my first ever podcast episode solo talking about WrestleMania 30 and what happened there, because I enjoyed that event so much that it led me into podcasting. And that video is still out there. If people want to hear a high school me trying to get through 30 minutes of talk on his own about WrestleMania 30. So I guess it's just that early part of 2014, the Rumble match, me getting really invested into like Dirt Sheets and whatever, and then actually getting into like podcasting about this thing, this crazy entertainment field in pro wrestling, would have to be WrestleMania 30. I guess specifically the triple threat between Bryan, Orton, and Batista that night. So I guess that's my answer. So let's go on to Le Champion, Chris Thompson on Twitter, sending in a question. He says, fitting as War Games was this weekend, what is your favorite War Games and least favorite from any promotion or time?
I don't know about least favorite ones, because there have been a bunch of really bad ones.
Yeah.
We all go back. I mean, 87 to me is the best. I think we talked about this before.
Yep.
Where it was just... you had the cage, you had the lights, you had everyone come down, and it's the Four Horsemen, and it's the Road Warriors, and it's Dusty, and it's Nikita, and they're tearing the crap out of each other. They're just kicking the crap out of each other. And it's a beautiful thing. It's an absolutely beautiful thing. That's my favorite. There's been some bad ones. But I don't know. Like, I don't know. I try to, like, the champion, you should know this. I try to eliminate. It's like, it's hard enough to get through the podcast. I try to eliminate, you know, some negative things like Snickers and Plinko and extra pulp and all that stuff. I just try and gas it, so it's just not in my mind anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's right. it's interesting selections there. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, 87 War Games is kind of the classic. I also look to the 92 War Games at Fall Brawl between Sting Squadron and the Dangerous Alliance. That's another fantastic one. Really, the war, you can't really go wrong with the War Games between 87 and 92. I think back to the 91 War Games with Sid power bombing Pillman and Pillman's head hitting the top of the cage. I remember that. As well. Worst War Games, you mentioned there's a lot you could go through. You could talk about the one on Nitro in 2000 that they randomly did involving Russo's Revenge. So that was the peak of Vince Russo. You could talk about the Ultimate Warrior returning during War Games, and they had the fake Warrior in there, and they had to use the trap door in order to do it, and it didn't do great for British Bulldog's back. And then you had the real Warrior come out there. Yeah. I think of that one, the 3v3v3 War Games, that one was. There's been some, like, I kind of, like, with the WWE War Games, like, to me, it's not like a pure War Games. That's just me being a War Games purist, because they don't have the cage over the top, and you can pin people in the War Games when the original War Games was, you know, submission or knockout or whatever, right? And so I just kind of look at some of the WWE ones, and like, I think if you're just being introduced to War Games, they're good introduction War Games matches, but like, you really want to see pure War Games at its best. It's the 87 and 92 WCW NWA yeah. War Games between there. And then final question here, Lee, and this is not a wrestling related question from Keely. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this one. She said, not wrestling related whatsoever, but I figured you guys would be the most entertaining way of settling some ongoing debates between her and her boyfriend, Derek.
Excellent.
Ketchup with steak / salmon, yes or no? I know. I was shocked when I read it too. I know.
What?
Especially the salmon part. I mean, my God.
Okay. There better be another one there.
There is another question in there. Yes.
Because we know the answer, Keely, and you better not be on the wrong side of that one. That's all I can tell you. It better be your boyfriend.
Yes. No ketchup on the steak or salmon. Look, I put extra pulp in my orange juice, but I'm not that crazy. The second one is it pronounced Cinnabon or a Cinnabun?
I like questions like this. It's like data or data. Find out if you're American or Canadian. And apparently you're American when you say data. So I want to hear your answer.
To be honest, I've kind of gone back and forth between the two.
Keely, what a shocker. Your leader's on the fence about answering a question.
You're cutting me off.
Don't worry about your leadership there. When it's a critical time to make a decision as the leader of the Family Feud team.
But I mostly go with Cinnabon is what I say.
Yeah, and you're wrong because it's a Cinnabon. It's a Cinnabon because that's the name of the company. Yes. Okay, you walk by. Oh, you're gonna get a Cinnabon. That's it. You don't say I'm going to get a Cinnabon because that's not the name of the company.
Right.
I don't walk by like, am I going to get an A&F when it's an A&W? No, I mean, no, get an A&W because that's the name of the company.
That's right.
So you knew you were wrong, Zach. That's good. So Keely, you're in deep trouble, and I understand, you know, I might have to come save you. I might have to come save you.
Like, wait a minute. I'm still waiting for your answer. Is Chris Jericho / Fozzy's son Judas a good song? That's all I want to know.
I played MJF. He's going to appear on AEW Dynamite tomorrow. It's going to be must watch TV. Here we go, Zach. This has been incredible.
Not shocked you try to avoid the question.
It's a good song, Zach.
Yeah. Is the Judas song a good song? Could you listen to it outside of wrestling and you'd be like, yeah, that's a good song.
Yes, it's on my Apple playlist and I listen to it all the time. I listen to it while I'm working out.
That explains a lot.
Right. I listen to it while I'm working out. Yes. I listen to it in times of motivation. We all know the words. Like, yes, Zach, it's a good song. I don't need I don't need these music aficionados like you and Matt Conisvita and all these like, oh, but the lyrics aren't deep and they don't talk about like the depths of the world. And it's okay. It's okay to not have great lyrics and have a really good melody and a catchy little sing along. Like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's all right. So yes. If you don't think so, you're not sane, Zach, which is also a great song by Fozzy. Yeah. So let's go. There's so many good songs.
Yeah. From Fozzy. I figured you would say that and then try to accuse me and other people being music aficionados when we dedicated the first 20 minutes to my music festival and be like, oh, why is this here? Why is this here? Meanwhile, I've got this all-star lineup of great artists my music festival.
No, you don't. You do? Don't. No, you don't.
Yeah, I do. It's an all-star lineup.
Yeah, we got to go. Zach, always fun to be able to catch up with you and can't wait to watch AEW this week. We got another of the best of seven. We'll have MJF talking. We got some things to lead into the month of December. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, totally. It's, you know, I think the AEW TV, I mean, we didn't get a chance to really to talk about it, but I thought last week's Dynamite was awesome. I thought it was a great show last week.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that next week. We'll have a couple shows to be able to talk about.
Definitely. I just see the progress of AEW, especially now with the Elite back on TV.
All right. So for Zach McGivin, I'm Lee Versage. Once again, you've been listening to another edition of This Is Wrestling.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of TSN Wrestling. Join us again next week for another hour of your favorite wrestling all-stars.